Last time we did a little introduction for everyone, but we're going to skip that. But what I would ask for you to do when you go to react to part of the presentation, the articles that were shared with us, if you could just briefly just introduce yourself so people will know who you are. And by briefly, I'm like maybe one or two bullet points of your background. But the this month's theme was focused on organizational transformation and adaptations. And what they were exploring in the five articles were how organizations are moving beyond just AI experimentation, our efforts in AI use, moving from there to actual full-fledged usage of AI within their organizations in a meaningful and embedded way. So we've got the five articles I think listed here that Tanya's going to put up, and we can all just take a minute to vote on the on what maybe. How do we do that? Is it going to be just vote on your top choices or?
There's two polls we have available. One is which one did you find most useful? And then the second option would be well, did one cause you tension? And that could be the starting point of where the conversation goes.
Okay.
Are you all feeling pretty aligned on needing a refresh, or we're good to just dive right into the poll?
I think a refresh would be helpful.
Dennis, do you feel confident in doing that, or we could do it as a group
I'd rather do
facilitated
that at,
thing?
yeah, I'd rather do that as a group. So if someone for the first one, the move AI from experimentation to transformation, if someone would like to briefly capture what that one was about.
And I can put the poll up so y'all could at least see the article titles, if that's of help. The other option would be we can open up the newsletter and screen share that and take a moment to just review Andrew, who puts the newsletter together, his version of what the article summaries were. Let me open that up in case that's a direction y'all might like to go.
That would be helpful, Tanya. Thank you.
Okay.
I do have summaries of these, but I'm not sure how concise they are. So, like on the first alternative, the first article, movement from AI to from experiment to transformation. The summary I have is that most companies are investing in AI, but failing to convert scattered task level productivity gains into meaningful business results. And they fall into what the authors call the micro productivity trap, optimizing tasks without redesigning workflows or rethinking the business. And as the article put it, the firms treat AI like it's a SaaS plugin, basically, rather than as a core component of their operating models. So that was the first one. Does that kind of resonate with what you guys thought? Okay. Do you want me to go to the second one that I have as just a synopsis?
I think it'd be great to do just a quick overview, and then I'll reopen the poll. So I'm
Sure.
sharing on the screen now
Great.
what Andrew put in as his
Oh.
overview.
Okay. That might be even more helpful. But on the second one, I had that organizations often stall when facing transformations that lack precedent, clear data, or a proven playbook. And the authors are arguing that many large-scale changes are adaptive challenges, not technical problems. And so they're approaching them as though they're technical problems, but they're really the organization's ability to adapt to change more than it is the technical aspect of it. Is that kind of what that says? Hopefully.
This one here was a different one. The third one was a hour-long webinar, I believe, and then the deck. So this is something different, and I'd love if you all have any thoughts on this type of a resource being included in the newsletter. For feedback I can share with Andrew, that would be appreciated. But and I know Dennis, you said you kind of struggled to get the time to get through this, so.
I did, mostly because I was trying to really understand the content that they were presenting, and so it's just harder, not as efficient when you're listening to people kind of talking through decks and that kind of thing. But anybody have any the way that they would summarize this third one, the using AI to transform organizations?
I'll give it a bit of a go.
Thanks, Jose.
I'm not that comfortable because, like you, it was a bit disjointed. But I kind of liked some of the things that came across. It was looking at the need for purpose, people, product, and processes, and then the preparation and protection required. And then they added pace and pyramid, which I didn't quite understand properly at the time. But it's the 10P. And that was the way they kind of structured the whole process of transforming AI into the organization. And I quite like that because it covered a lot of things that I thought were pertinent for putting an organization on the proper foundation. So it kind of gave you the basis of how to integrate it and stop looking at it as separate items. And one of the things they touched on was how it was cross-functional. And the CIO and CTO and CPO and others had to work together to achieve this. And it wasn't a single track process. So it kind of reinforced the previous article you mentioned. I don't know if I've covered all of it. And it gave kind of a matrix of where you could look at things and how you could look at complexity, and how people were involved with risk and complexity, and technology was in the base. But actually, the people were important in terms of what was the word they used? I've lost it. discernment and how important discernment was in the whole process and why humans had to be in the loop. They didn't say that, but that's how I interpreted it.
Thank you for that. Appreciate that. The fourth one, if I had a focal point on this one, I guess the key point of this fourth one was just an understanding that this systemic change or facing uncertainty, that you have to remember that employees aren't just along for the ride, which is what Jose was just talking about from the previous one as well, that you have to engage employees in a meaningful way. And to me, that was sort of the basis of the fourth article on Empower to Transform. And on the fifth one, yeah, the European model. My summary on that was European firms are rapidly adopting AI, but 95% of them are not tracking the impact on employees. And so they're by doing that, or by not doing that, by not looking at the employee impact, they're creating a major blind spot in understanding whether AI is truly delivering the value or not, and how it's delivering that value. And then the article stresses, or it stresses that the vast majority of business leaders say that their organizations are not tracking AI's impact at all. So, I mean, that's a huge gap if that's true. So that to me was the basis of the last article, was the extent to which we're able to measure AI's impact in an organization, and then how that needs to be done. So did we get through the voting part of that, or the on identifying
All right, now
the
I'll reopen the.
okay.
A couple of folks voted, but I don't know that everybody. We had four of you vote, so. Well, let me see. How do I reopen it? And okay, so I'm sorry, but it did clear out the votes of the folks of you who already shared your most useful article. So you can revote, and then we'll give it here about 30 seconds for you to run through. All right. Everybody voted, and I'll share it.
Okay, without a roadmap. I think everybody probably has some experience in that area, maybe. So there's some energy around that one. So that one's the highest one, and the how to move from AI experience to AI transformation. So maybe we want to focus on those two first. What about the second poll where you talk about the where did we feel the most friction?
I think, do you want to start with that, or do you want to use that as a, if we kind of get a lull in the conversation, then we can use that as a guide to jump into?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Okay.
So we're starting out with the second article, Leading Organization Change Without a Roadmap. We've got a lot of experience on this call, so I'm going to try to minimize my talking and maximize your reflection. So I just open this up to general reactions to that article, and also invite you to not worry about being polite and go ahead and just start offering your ideas and observations.
One thing that comes to mind about the topic of the article on leading transformation without a roadmap is that we're in a time when we're being pressured to take action on AI, for example. And not everyone has had the time to think through, or even can we possibly know the implications. But that pressure results in, let's just do something and get a roadmap later. So I wanted to open the conversation with that context.
May I ask just a clarifying question? Where do you where are you experiencing the pressure is being exerted from? What level of the organization? I think you're on mute, Matt, just in case.
Okay, the most direct pressure that I experience is from my manager. And I know that she wants to be seen as an AI leader. I mean, this was even within 6 months after the Gen AI, the release of OpenAI ChatGPT became a thing. Now, I think the rest of it that she experienced is sort of a group effect, just like a rumor. You don't know where it started. Maybe the executives are saying that. I didn't hear them. But, if you want to be, keep up, you better. Like, that's the assumption that's underneath. That's the way we've experienced it at a major pharmaceutical firm.
Reactions.
That's interesting because I found denial. Just ignore it. There's no application done by the wait for the use cases to come, then we'll do something about it. A bit like IoT, because we were in a telco, and so there was, and it's a bit odd in my opinion. And I thought the mindset was in the wrong place. But I suppose we were in the middle of a major transformation ourselves, so maybe we weren't wanting to do anything else at the same time. I would have thought it was appropriate time since you were moving anyway and changing everything in front of you with 5G. But anyway, so that was my experience. I can't comment now because I'm not in the project.
Thank you for that.
I have to give a huge plus one. I'm sorry, who was it that made the comment? Because I was on another screen for a second, still
Well,
trying to
that
read the
was,
article.
well, Matt started out and Jose
Excuse me,
added to
Matt.
that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. In all of the clients I'm working with, there is the frenzy at the top ripples its way down to, it starts with boards to CEOs. All the CEOs went to Davos. They came back and they're like, "We're behind. What are we doing?" And it just ripples down throughout the organization. I just conducted a a research study on the future of marketing organizations, and it was and the white paper will be produced in a couple of weeks. But looking at the results, it was interesting looking at the CMOs and their feeling about the skills gap of their teams. They felt that their teams, when you go across a whole bunch of different skills, they think that their teams are like 85% ill prepared for the AI era. But you get lower into the organization, the people who are hands-on, the people who are actually doing things, and they don't feel that the skills gap is as great. So there is a distinct ripple down effect of FOMO, fear, and it's driven by media. It's driven by heck, academians are out there, pounding the pavement on some of this stuff. The technology providers. So it's an unfortunate reality that I feel so badly for the CEOs I speak with. They're in desperate times. The boards are pressuring them. I one client, I was trying to talk them out of naming a chief AI officer, and he agreed. He said, frankly, I don't think it's going to work, but I'm doing it anyway. It sends a clear signal to the board. And so it's that pressure is just so intense right now. I'm doing everything I can out there to try to alleviate it, but I feel like the forces and the voices are so heavy. It's causing exactly what you said, Matt.
Thoughts about that? Yeah, right. Jose, you're on mute as well.
Everything I read is in panic. And you're absolutely spot on, I think. Every time I look somewhere, it seems to be we're behind, we're being, if we don't do something now, we'll be out. 18 months is the timeline. If you haven't caught up in 18 months, you'll disappear. So it's existential. That's what you're picking up. And I
Well, I'm kind of wondering as you guys are talking through this, whether leadership is being helpful or are they an impediment to the transformation process? And if they're being helpful, how are they being helpful? Because I think what we're hearing, at least what I'm interpreting, is that there's this pressure to do something, and so the pressure is pushed down on the middle organization, but with what support and with what direction and how do they make sense of it? So I'm kind of wondering what do you think that leaders should be doing in terms of these transformations?
I overheard a CIO at a conference talking about her organization and how they did something similar to the pharmaceutical organization where they provided an environment and encouraged experimentation. I'm trying to remember if some required approval before going ahead or others just said, here's your playground, go do something. So they provided some boundaries, but I don't think there was, maybe as a pilot, anything could happen. But then to get approval for more funding, it would need to go under review.
Others?
Well, now I feel like we're getting to the topic number one or article number one,
Yeah, we're going to be moving.
micro productivity. Matt, I mean, I see exactly what you're saying. So the conversations again that I'm having with my clients are, when the strategy is vibe coding, like, so I had it's the engagement's complete now. I had an automotive company, and they hired me to talk about AI adoption and fluency throughout the organization, and a little bit of governance woven into that. Before that, I asked for their AI strategy, got an 80-page document. and went through it. Their AI strategy was, lack of better words, vibe coding. So the CIO and their team gave a choice to, if you were the plant in Poland, if you were the plant in Mexico, you got a choice of whether your team used Enterprise Claude or Enterprise ChatGPT, and you got taught to vibe code. And so they were looking at it from the standpoint of, like you said, Matt, guardrails, and you kind of do what you're going to do. That strategy directly leads to the micro productivity trap. What gains are you going to get from that? You're going to get like little incremental things. You need to have a strategy, a full-on strategy. So I think that that's, I look at the whole AI thing, and I say to every client, there's three things that make your AI efforts fruitful and successful, and that is your operating model. And I've got a very distinct operating model that I recommend to literally, it works in almost every situation, any size, almost any sector. It's a federated model, not a centralized model, not a decentralized model. Vibe coding is not a stress. And the second one is you have to have an AI platform, meaning something that grounds everyone together to work from. It helps with training. It helps with adoption. It helps with hackathons. It helps with sharing AI assets across the organization. And then the third is data, making sure that your data is accessible to that platform, to all the to the folks in the operating model. If you can achieve clarity and execution and alignment in those three areas, you will be off to the races. You will create an AI flywheel. And the whole thing with use cases then follows upon that. If you have a federated model and you're in the marketing team, you should create your own segmentation models. You don't need that to be guided from some central function. Now, I think it was Jose, I think, was saying this before, and it's in, alluded to in that micro productivity trap. What you do need is someone to string together the best workflows and processes that go across the organization. That requires special effort. I usually recommend, if you had a transformation office, kind of blow that up a bit, take it down a notch, and look at how you can improve your processes that are horizontal across the organization. And that's where you get some of those use cases that are cross-functional. So that's kind of my nutshell. Generally, every engagement is surrounds that exact framework and topic.
I like what you're saying. I would want to add something. Don't you think boards are putting a lot of pressure on the C-suite to produce some kind of ROI? And therefore, productivity is the easiest one to measure, and it's the obvious one. And they're missing all the other factors that go with it, including the risks behind it and bringing the people on board at the same time. So that's just a comment I wanted to add.
I would say if they're not putting pressure on them, they should be. But I'm afraid what I'm hearing is just do something. I don't think they're even the ones that I've experienced, they're not even planning how could we measure.
Janet, I was wondering on the operating model that you've developed, is that an operating model that overlays the organization's existing operating model, or is that an, how does that work?
Yeah, it's an enterprise AI operating model. So yeah, it would overlay it, it's how you conceive of and think about AI across an enterprise. Matt's cracking me up because he's literally going through article by article. You were just saying something, Matt, about shoot, what were you just saying? Wait, the ROI and just do something. Oh, that's another article about European firms not measuring ROI. And that's another thing. Again, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be, but this is another conversation I have pretty often. And I have a lot of experience. I'm sorry, I didn't say before. I run my own firm called org.works. I've only been doing it for a little over a year, but I came right into it at just the right time because my last role, I was the chief digital and technology officer at the Ralph Lauren Corporation. So I actually have hands-on AI experience from which to draw upon, and I sit on a public board, so I know what that all of this feels like. So my perspective is a little bit varied on this, but on the ROI thing, I look at it and think, you've got to take your methods of measuring ROI, and I look at it and say, a lot of it is not direct ROI. You save people some time, unless they're hourly. There's no that that's that those are soft benefits. Then you try to look at where you can get hard benefits. Well, I was able to do something with AI that I had a marketing agency do before, and we saved $1 million directly from, we didn't pay them this because we now just did it ourselves. So you've got those direct ones. So I like to try to have core capabilities and core uses that I like to frame up for boards on the quarterly meetings. I have like a scorecard that I try to give companies to use for their board presentations on, on adoption, what that looks like. And people want to like come up with some really complex way of measuring adoption. I look at it quite simply, which is, how many people are trained? How many people are leveraging whatever, if you have an AI platform, if you have, different groups, different hackathons, what your participation is. That's how I look at quote adoption and fluency is very simple measurements like that. And then I look at it and say, what are the key use cases that I want to highlight for the board this quarter? And what do they mean to us as a company? And then there's things that don't have an ROI and they will have an ROI over the long term. Those are core capabilities that you need to build, and you need to get everyone on your governance team to align on what those core capabilities are to say, I'm not necessarily going to get an ROI, but I'm willing to invest the resources because this is going to be meaningful for us over the long term. And I've got like two of those that I would highlight at Ralph Lauren, and I won't get into them here unless anyone was really curious. But I like to look at it from the standpoint of direct savings, some soft savings where something was improved upon, but it's not measurable in actual hard dollars. Core capabilities, and then of course you've got those through things that are going to have a long-term impact over the long term. So I like to frame it up for boards like that so that they can see the progress that you're making in your AI journey. So the way I look at it is from a board perspective, because a lot of the issues start there. I'm seeing it again. I didn't feel that way with my board with Ralph Lauren. Our board doesn't act that way for the board that I'm on, but I see with a lot of my clients where the boards are just almost, and part of it is sometimes they don't really understand and they have the FOMO and they're just pressing. So I think that it's so important for the CEO and the CIO to be very aligned, be very calm, and be very, use their best influence with the board to exemplify this. We have a strategy, we know what we're doing, we have a governance process, and here's our evidence of that. If they can convey that and give that board the confidence, that goes so far.
Thank you for that. That was really enlightening to hear that whole sequence of experiences you've had with that. As you were going through that, I was kind of wondering, and this thought kept popping into my mind as I was reading really each of the articles, and that is, how much of this, at least initially, does it feel like we're just doing business with ourselves and not really doing business on the business, because there's a lot of discussions in the articles that are there about the efforts that were made, and there's varying degrees of agreement on whether those efforts are actually contributing to the business, the bottom line of the business. And so I guess the question I would have for you is, as a group, is there a shaping curve that we need to go through in terms of AI transformation that includes starting maybe with the awareness and then moving towards the actual realization of return on investment? And I think, Janet, you've kind of hit on that with the approach that you've taken.
May I ask a clarifying question? When you refer to awareness, are you referring to awareness in the general potential user population, the employees of an organization, or at the board level that Janet described?
Well, Matt, as you were talking about the different experiences you've had where people are told to go do something, to me, that's sort of that building the awareness level within the organization at the employee level to go see how you can experiment with this tool and let's see what you come back with, kind of a thing. To me, that's just kind of building awareness within the organization, which then maybe helps with developing some training around that organization, the needs of that organization, that you can create a foundation of knowledge that people can then build on once you start going through that path, that shaping curve of moving towards transformation.
This is just an impression, but I think the mindset of the leaders of the organization, and particularly as middle managers, because they're the ones that have got all the pressure of getting things done and producing results. And we often forget about these guys or these ladies and men in the middle who get squeezed between the pressure to produce something and getting the people below to be engaged and involved. And I still think there has to be a degree of adaptability or flexibility in the mindset, particularly with something new and you don't know how it's going to apply. Because I come from a changed background, so I've always said it's all context driven, and the context is changing so rapidly that we've got to be able to adjust as we go. That goes to one of the articles which I liked. So I think we need to think a little bit about how that ties in. I liked a lot what Janet was saying because I think that makes a lot of sense. But I think we need to carry it to the next level below that. And I think the guardrails that Matt mentioned earlier, I think, is very important. And I think the development and engagement that you bring in with the people at the bottom is also very important. But they need to have a sense of direction and understand why it's changing when it happens.
That re resonates with me a lot, but I'm just kind of trying to be quiet so other people can jump in.
I've been jumping in all the time. I feel like I've got the, and you can hear I'm pretty passionate about it. Jose, I think that you're right. I mean, I was talking about executives and with the pressure that's on them, that pressure just pushes hard on middle management. And middle management is the link to getting everything done, and full stop, because higher levels don't actually know how the work gets done. Lower levels don't have enough of a strategic view to actually get the stuff done. So it is the middle that is forced with really trying to truly execute uses and make them happen to get those results, to be able to report up. And it's a tough spot. Oh, and by the way, they're under constant pressure of, oh, we need to eliminate middle management. We need to eliminate middle management. So it's like, it is just, it's a challenging place for them to be. So I do say that I feel badly for CEOs and leaders who are getting all this pressure, but then they're pushing that pressure on the middle management. And it doesn't stop there. I have a mentee of mine who works in the cybersecurity team of one of the top five companies in the globe, and he was expressing his frustration to me that they are being forced to, like, they have to come up with like new AI use cases and implementing it and trying to like so it's get it's and he's recent college grad about 2 years ago, so he's relatively new, so that pressure, and he feels it. He feels that there's a complete disregard to him as a new employee, and he's just expected to come up with solutions to potentially eliminate his and his peers' roles to benefit everybody above. And so, I mean, that pressure is just, it's rippling its way through.
Let me see if I can marry two things together, Jose's comments and Janet, your comments, because the way that those are combining to me is in terms of what was brought up in Article 2. There were 2 points in Article 2 that they had spent some time describing. One was redefining the role of leadership. What is the role look like? What does the role need to look like in order to enable these transformations? And then the second piece of that, which I think is equally, if maybe not more important, is the governance aspect of it. How are decisions going to be made? How are decisions going to be made about the way AI is actually implemented in an organization or pursued in an organization? So what do you think? Let's, if you don't mind, if we could just kind of explore that first question about what's leadership's role? What should it be going forward in for an AI transformation?
One part that I thought was missing when we were working on our use case, which while the manager had a great deal of enthusiasm, those of us who were executing on it recognized there were a great deal of built-in constraints that use case may not have been the best, but no one was going to say that. So I'm thinking what was missing that leadership could provide, the senior leaders could provide, is a reinforcement of the value chain, how value flows to the organization, so that we can then assess at which points in the value chain would AI be the most effective, have the most impact, have the greatest ROI. That was just something with a large enough pharmaceutical organization. We were all on our little places and making sure we did our jobs to the T, but we really didn't know, well, what happens above us and below us, or before us or after us in the value chain. There was something missing about, how an organization like that negotiates with payers and builds relationships with healthcare practitioners, which are the two big keys. So that's one thing I think leadership can talk about. Potential roles that AI might play at different points in the value chain.
Thank you for that. But I had the same reaction in the importance of the value, understanding the value chain within the organization at the highest level, the high level value chain that kind of supports the operating model itself. Other thoughts about that?
Of course, I have a thought about it. I don't, does it,
Oh, great.
who all was at the ODF conference in Pittsburgh? Was there anybody there?
I wasn't
I
sure. I was in
know.
Greece.
Oh, too bad. Anyway, one of the presentations was Accenture, and they had a little picture of a super high level like operating model, and they were talking about top down, bottom up, and horizontal organizational change. And I couldn't agree with that more. That like I have to say, I often, well, I sometimes agree with the large consulting firms, but this is one where we're in violent agreement. Because Matt, I think that to your point, and then going back to the micro productivity trap, the part that we as organizations, I think we need to change. I keep saying like we got to stop talking about flattening organizations. We've got to flatten vertically. So get rid of every group that sits between groups just to coordinate, because in this age of AI, they're making things more complex. But what you do need is what Accenture was saying, and what I always call like through lines. I was trying to come up with a creative name for like through, lack of better words, things that pull together. Because exactly what you said, Matt, where is you were working on a use case that was within your sphere, but was it really going to be that effective unless it started before, and you know, it went through the value chain to actually have the effectiveness that you needed. So you need those through lines. So that's one of the things I think is going to change about you know, organizations fundamentally that I'm recommending is, and I worry about it becoming a little bit unwieldy, like, or is it going to create 1,000 different through lines? But I look at, like, an example would be AI governance would be like a through line that you because that's because that gives the structure, and it's a through line. I think that you need a through line for enterprise-wide process change. That's the workflow that you can use AI that glues it together by department, function by department across the value chain. I'm, you know, I've been doing a lot of talking with companies now about agentic commerce, which is, you know, that's a cousin to AI, and it's another complicated one. You know, I've got CEOs of retail companies flipping out, like, do I need to create another department that's agentic commerce? Like, no, you don't. You need a through line for agentic commerce. So I think that that horizontal thinking is, I think, going to be something that is really going to benefit organizations in the future. And think about what those through lines are. But then there's like, well, how do you make it so that there's not, you know, like, I'll give an example. Another company has a customer experience department. Well, the customer experience department, the marketing department can't stand them, and they think that they're in charge, and, you know, sales thinks that they're in charge. And it's like that vertical department shouldn't exist. It should be a horizontal through line that is a compilation of people that are in those different teams that get together, and then you have a leader who still is able to break through if there's any concerns about how we treat the customer experience. So customer experience will be a through line, not vertical, horizontal. So I think that that's another concept that I'm trying to encourage people to think about as well.
Big challenge on that one, because people still like their silos and they fight for them and they want to preserve their capabilities or their skills that they've got. They don't want to share them. I mean, skills hoarding is classic. And as you put pressure down, people even want to herd more or hoard more than previously. So somehow leaders have got to change their attitude towards the pressure they're putting down and facilitate the cross-functional, the boundary-spanning aspects of these capabilities. And we really need to understand, and they need to understand, and coming from an HR background, I'm always saying, we don't know the skills and capabilities we've got in the organization. So how can we boundary span? And we're wasting massive amounts of resources to do what you're suggesting, which is fundamental to work horizontally. So, yeah.
Keith, Eileen, what are you guys thinking? Heidi?
I think I might be coming across as a bit of a Luddite when, and maybe need this counterpoint. This pressure, I think it's possible that the companies who have invested billions in this technology need to make some kind of return on their own investment. And so there's a lot of maybe churn going on to get people to think rush, rush, hurry, hurry. You got to do it now. Don't wait till later. And the more I feel that, the more I hear that, the more I feel like it's, I'm with a used car salesman, or I'm being scammed in some way because there's that rush factor. The more you try and rush me, the more I doubt the seriousness, or I doubt the validity of what you're telling me. So too much pressure, I think, is going back to what Jose maybe said, is you're going to make people feel like, whoa, wait a minute. I need to slow down a little bit. I need to understand this and process this in a certain way. And I don't want to have that feeling or be that skeptical. Maybe it's just my age. I'm getting really skeptical. But I think there's that we need to overcome too, is the skepticism over, you know, you've spent billions on this and now you're pressuring me so you can have a return on your investment. Let's slow down a bit and have more of a conversation instead of this rush, rush, hurry, hurry. It's a mandate. Everybody's got to do it.
Yeah, at times it just feels like you're generating activity to show that you're doing something, that there's something
Exactly.
going on. Yeah, activity for
Exactly.
activity's sake. Keith, Heidi, what are you thinking? You want to add to that or something else?
As I'm writing, and trying to process all my thoughts. Janet's pretty much saying exactly what I'm trying to process. I think there's a process in terms of going from a preparation all the way to transformation. I think the role of the CEO is to potentially curate the leaders that are going to prepare for AI. And that's, I think, developing the use case, writing out the processes. And that's going to only be kind of the micro improvements. And are we going to find ROI in there? Probably little, but you have to look at the improvement in that process. I think where the real ROI comes and its attention, I guess, with the micro improvements is those cross lines. Is it the role of the CIO to say, I'm going to help you with the micro improvements, but also going to see how to best work across functions. And that's, I think, where the transformation really can be reviewed. You can actually say there's innovation there. But then as I write that out, there's also the new tension of who owns that transformation and who owns that that new process. And I think that could get a little dicey. Is it now the CIO who created this new process and automated it and did that, or is it still the owner of the silo? So I think even just the ownership would have to be kind of talked about and spliced out as you're going through the transformation.
I think in, I'm sorry, just going to chime in on that. I think in most of these cases, very rarely would the CIO be the leader of most of these through lines. From my perspective, it depends on what they are. But you know, if I use the customer experience through line as an example, I look at that and think it's not building a separate organization. What it's saying is, I'm going to have the representative that really knows customer experience best in digital, the one that knows customer experience best in marketing, the one that knows it best in sales. We're going to form a team, but not, we're not, it's not a team. I hate to use the word committee because committee's not good. And we're going to meet once every 2 months to make sure that we're aligned on what we're doing. We're going to be communicating with each other, reporting, and you come up with your process by which you're synthesizing what that means. So it's not a different organization. It's an alignment. And then one of those people that's in that committee needs to be the leader that says, I will take control of that. Now, it just so happens, like at my last company, I wasn't necessarily just the CIO, but I was the person who did do the AI governance that was across the teams. Somebody else was doing customer experience. I'm recommending again to different companies that, you know, agentic commerce, if that's going to be an area, like you need someone who does, you know, internal search, someone who's going to do the relationships with ChatGPT and Claude. You're going to need, you get the different people for them to get together. They get together every 6 weeks. They have a setting and you align on things so that way you're not wasting. Everyone developing their own AI for the same uses is a big waste of the company's resources. So you need to get aligned on those things. So I look at it and say, you start with the CEO that says, this is how we do this. Everyone doesn't do their own thing. Like, you know, and if there's a problem, it can get escalated, but you hope that, you know, that never has to happen. And occasionally it will, where someone's going to say, like, oh, I don't agree with whatever so-and-so's doing. But that's kind of how I look at those through lines as they're a combo of formal, informal. I'm going to eventually write a paper on what I think that those are and give the examples of what I believe that those are. Again, trying to move from vertical things that are official departments where they should be actually a practice that gets agreed upon horizontally without there being additional leaders, without additional headcount. It's just making sure it's communication and alignment. It gets back to, I forget who was saying before, leadership. This is the time where leadership matters more than ever. And leaders need to step up. They need to provide clarity for their teams. They need to provide cohesion and alignment. That's the job of the day now as leaders.
What a
So
great
Janet,
question.
I'm going to ask a challenge question about, do you feel that the future design of the organization will reflect these horizontal cross lines.
I do. So I get asked all the time, like, well, what do you see the shape of orgs? Do you see them being flatter and wider? And do you see them? And I've been saying it's like I'm picturing the shape to be a little bit more like thinner, like picture like a bunch of like mountains that are and there's some of them are different sizes. So like picture like a mountainous kind of thing with like narrow kind of things, and then picture like drawbridges that go across them, like your footbridges that go that connect them. That's how I'm seeing the future of organizations. Again, this is my perspective. I was, and I don't know, Tanya, I appreciate that you put that up, and I had a different graphic. I was trying to search for it feverishly. The I think it was Accenture. Was Deloitte there as well? Would they have presented? It was
No.
okay, sorry. It was definitely Accenture. It was. I'll find the graphic and I'll send it to you. But I think that they kind of have a similar thing. I don't know if they push that as much as I do and I've been trying to come up with a good creative word. I'd love it if as an ODF and EODF, we came up with what those through lines are and kind of defined it as a practice, as a leading practice. I'd love it if we could do that. That way we'd all sort of be, and I know that Accenture somehow shares that perspective, and I'd love to come up with a name and a perspective on it that we all generally aligned on that we could put out there and say, this is what we see as org design professionals.
I have another challenge for you. Where does accountability sit? Because somewhere along the line, someone's going to be accountable. And I think leaders, we're going back to the question, are still going to be accountable, but are they going to empower, which goes to the other part, one of the other articles, are they going to empower these cross lines to do the best work they can do? Because that's the only way we're going to engage people and change from what Gallup is showing us as being extremely the lowest level of engagement with middle managers and employees. So there's my challenge.
Well, I love that challenge. I don't view the vertical through line as being the authority. That I view that as, lack of a better word, stitching. Again, if I use agentic commerce, that's a great example. If you don't have something that's looking at, well, customer service has their own chatbot that talks to the customers. But then you're going to have a different one that sits on your website, and then you're going to have one that sits. It's like so that might be fine for right now, but I tell you what, you should be aligned and make sure that the AI that you've got running, that the customer feeds that you got, like, you want to make sure you're aligned. It doesn't mean that that vertical, I'm sorry, that that horizontal team is dictating to those other teams. It means that they're aligning the teams. So I look at it and still go back to Jose. The authority is still, when you're in customer service, you are still responsible for delivering customer service. And if there's a bot that you've got, or an agent that you've got, that's talking to your consumers, you are still responsible for the execution of that. You're still responsible for working with the technology team. If there's any kind of drift or issues with the AI that's behind it, you're still accountable to that. The difference with the horizontal is that you're making sure that you're aligned for places where all those customer touch points can't all just be separate things that end up causing an ununified customer experience over the long haul. That's the way I look at it. Accountability should still stay in the area where the accountability already was.
I kind of hear
My perspective on it.
matrix, but flatter.
But I guess the
I had
difference.
an idea while you were talking that what about a clover leaf, where this core thing in the center is your core, the top down, and everything else is running around it. So it's like the planets, and we've got the sun in the middle, and the planets run around this plane. completely free from each other, but linked through this core. Just an idea.
Yeah, the shapes and the whatevers we could, that's all, yeah, some people think in different shapes, so yeah.
I want to give Heidi a chance because I think you were getting ready to say something, Heidi.
Yeah, thank you. For me, I think culture really comes into play here also. It kind of dictates how you work together and how normal it is to work together and to collaborate the horizontals, Janet, that you were talking about. For me, it's how normal it is in organizations to work like that, and then how normal it is in that sense to align on who has accountability for which piece of the outcome also. So for me, there's definitely a cultural component with leadership right in the middle, to reinforce and install whenever needed. That cannot be forgotten, because I think it even outbeats almost strategic direction. So for me, in the whole discussion, there were several elements that absolutely resonated with me. And the more I see things also coming back to how can we empower people to come up bottom up, not so much top down, but that depends on culture, with the best ideas that bring value to the organization, and that then Hans is almost spontaneously being pulled forward in cross-functional teams or whatever you want to call them. So the club somehow redefined in a different way, but empowered from very much from the bottom up, I think, is also a way to look at it.
Thank you for that. Interesting perspectives shared. Thank you for sharing all your ideas and your experiences with that. I think we were able to kind of merge all these articles together to some degree because we were talking about different elements of all of them. And I think that's probably the best way to go about these because there is a thread that runs through all of them that you can draw from. So I appreciate your time and participation today.
Yeah, I think
Find that.
Matt had some sort of magic that he was able to pull all the different articles together in his themes.
Great job, Matt. Thank you.
All right, well, folks,
Thank
thank
you.
you so much. Matt, did you have something you want to chime in real quick?
No, just no one has said that before.
You have magic. All right. Well, we very much appreciate you, Dennis, being here and facilitating and keeping the conversation moving forward for our first-time attendees. Hopefully, you've got a glimpse into how this the flow of the conversation goes. It sometimes it's deep into one article. Sometimes it is a more generalized conversation that nips at little bits and pieces of the resources shared in that. So this offering is always the last Wednesday of each month, except for maybe August, because EODF often does a book edition in August, and we don't expect y'all to read five books and then jump in and have a conversation about it the following weeks or 2 weeks later. So I'm happy to stay online here and answer any questions if anybody has something about the community as a whole. Thank you very much, Dennis, for facilitating again today. If anybody else
My
would like to
pleasure.
facilitate a call in the future, let me know, because we just look for a returning participant to help lead these discussions each month. Otherwise, I wish you all a great rest of your Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
everyone.
Thank you.